Glenn Hauser here with Continent of Media, number 0303. Continent of Media is a supplement to World of Radio, and unlike that weekly program, this program deals with media around the American continent, not especially shortwave. It's broadcast exclusively on Radio for Peace International, and also available on the web thanks to Universal Radio, offering quality amateur and shortwave radio equipment since 1942. For information or a catalog, call Universal Radio toll-free at 1-800-431-3939 or visit them on the web at www.universal-radio.com. There was quite an interesting article in the Star-Ledger in New Jersey, written by Claudia Perry, May 25th, and thanks to Jilly Dibka for sending us a link to it. It's titled New Jersey Radio, In Tune with the Garden State's Many Voices. New Jersey radio is more than an afterthought to New York and Philadelphia. Although the Garden State is in the middle of those top 10 markets, it can be heard loud and clear. The state may be small geographically, but New Jersey has four distinct radio markets of its own, in addition to being part of the New York and Philly listenership. There are at least 168 stations that can be heard within its borders. Jersey commuters can tune in to the usual rock, sports talk, and oldies favorites, and can also hear news and music from Korea and South Asia, as well as stations whose programming ranges from black gospel to the sound of big bands. I'm going to have to omit a large portion of this article, but I recommend that you read it, and we'll include a link to it in the summary for this Continent of Media 0303. Toward the end, it gets to Multicultural Radio Broadcasting, a New York-based company, which owns four radio stations in New Jersey. The company buys stations and then leases the airwaves to local producers in various ethnic communities. WNSW 1430 offers Korean music and news. WPAT, that's 930 as I recall, is programmed in Russian during the week and plays Caribbean-oriented music and news on weekends. The minority radio segment is one of the industry's fastest-growing areas, but multicultural East Coast Vice President Tony Wong demurs. The populations we reach are not being served by other stations, he says. I don't know about fastest-growing, but our business is steady. There are a lot of immigrants who come to this area. They want to find out information about home. One of multicultural stations, WTTM, 1680 AM on the X-band, and thus widely heard not only all over the U.S., but across the Atlantic, has its studios in Metuchen and transmitter in Princeton. Its programming is geared to South Asian listeners, with shows about cricket, weddings, and Bollywood entertainment news, mixed with music from various South Asian cultures. Kulraj Anand, the program director for WTTM, said he wanted the station to be part of the community. BBC Radio, which Anand owns, leased the 10,000-watt station a year ago from Multicultural. It has listeners as far away as West Virginia. More than that, as I've just pointed out, its core audience is the estimated 450,000 South Asians in Central Jersey and Pennsylvania. Anand says, our community has grown a lot. Our culture and music is one of the oldest in the world. We're seeing our music become part of mainstream America. Mamta Narula, a computer engineer in Kenilworth, who's the host of three programs on the station, delivers her on-air patter in a blend of Hindi and English. Her Tuesday night show is a mix of music from Bollywood movies, audience quizzes, and up-to-date news from the Bombay film world. She also does a wedding talk show on Sundays and a three-hour show on Saturdays with co-host Sanjeev Pandya that counts down the top 10 and delivers more Bollywood news. Narula says, I may be a computer engineer, but my heart and soul is in this. People have recognized me in the store just when they hear me speak. They'll come up and say, are you Mamta Jisko Kuch Nahin Jamta? Her signature phrase, which loosely translates to Mamta, the woman who doesn't like anything but music. I get a kick out of it, she says. Anand, whose station is staffed by 70 volunteers, offers programming in Urdu, Hindi, Tamil, Gujarati, Bengali, and Punjabi. He plans to offer a training program in the coming months for kids who want to get into radio. Anand says this is a society where everyone is an immigrant. Having this station gives confidence to people in our community. From 5,000 listeners in Newark 92 years ago to WTTM's South Asian listeners, New Jersey Radio has always been able to identify and serve its audience. The story of New Jersey Radio is the story of the 567 towns in the state. Our radio reflects what an eclectic bunch we are. Andy Sinnott sends a story in Newsday, May 21st, from AP, headlined, New Jersey TV Tower Proposal in Question. Dateline Bayonne, a plan to build a 2,000-foot TV tower is on hold after a group of broadcasters asked the Federal Aviation Administration to temporarily suspend its review of the project, the Star-Ledger of Newark reported. The Metropolitan Television Alliance made its decision after plans for the Bayonne Tower received a negative review from FAA officials who addressed takeoffs and landings from airports in the New York metro area, says Pat Smith, spokesman for the alliance. He did not elaborate. Building the tower in Bayonne would mean rerouting planes at three area airports, according to an FAA review released last year. A new tower would improve TV reception in the metro area, which has been spotty for some households without cable since the old tower at the World Trade Center was destroyed in the attacks of September 11, 2001. The MTVA had asked for permission to build a temporary tower on Governor's Island in New York while the Trade Center site is being rebuilt. But Mayor Michael Bloomberg has said he would be unlikely to support such a plan. Since the terrorist attacks, the MTVA has been transmitting from a backup system aboard the Empire State Building. Though that system is being upgraded, it is outdated. The tower in Bayonne would cost $200 megadollars and would be the world's largest freestanding structure, surpassing the 1,815-foot CN Tower in Toronto. It would serve 11 area TV stations and some FM and emergency communications systems. There's been a lot of press about this, at least those who care about opera. First sent to us from the New York Times of May 21st via Joel Rubin. Chevron Texaco to drop sponsorship of Metropolitan Opera broadcasts. Chevron Texaco announced it would withdraw its support from the Met Opera Saturday afternoon live radio broadcast after the 2003 and 4 season, ending the longest continuous commercial sponsorship in broadcast history. Joseph Volpe, general manager of the Met, said he was determined to continue the broadcast without Chevron Texaco and that he would look for a new sponsor. Started on Christmas Day 1931 with Hansel and Gretel, the Met matinee broadcasts have introduced opera to millions of people around the world. Mr. Volpe said the broadcast had been the single most powerful audience development program, introducing opera to families, and had inspired opera stars. Many of the singers today first discovered opera on the radio broadcasts. Patricia E. Yerington, Chevron Texaco's VP for Public and Government Affairs, says, as our business has evolved, we believe it's important to focus more of our resources directly with the countries and markets where we do business. Beginning in 1940, Texaco was the sole sponsor of the broadcasts, which are now heard live from the Met stage at Lincoln Center 20 times a year on 360 stations at an annual cost of about $7 megadollars. It's broadcast from December through April, reaching an estimated 10 mega listeners in 42 countries. More from this New York Times story via Mike Cooper. The broadcasts are presented without commercial interruption except for references to Texaco Chevron in the commentary. Chevron bought Texaco for 36 gigadollars in 2000. While 7 megadollars may not seem like much to a major corporation, Chevron Texaco's decision comes at a time when the company has suffered financial problems. Last year, the chief executive took a 45% pay cut due to a decline in profits. The Met, too, has had a tough year and faces a nearly $10 million deficit attributed to the drop in foreign tourism. The 2003-04 live radio broadcast season starts December 13th with the Met's new production of La Juive by Halévy and is to conclude on April 24th with a broadcast, appropriately, of Wagner's Götterdämmerung. Still on the subject of fine music, we have more about a story we've covered from time to time. The possibility that WRRFM, the city-owned classical music station in Dallas, would change frequencies and gain a lot of money for the city, but reduce its coverage. There's been a lot of opposition to this in Dallas, and we have some stories about it from the morning news of May 20th and 21st. Here's the headline, Council Panel Rips Change for WRR. Frequency swaps cash isn't worth cutting off listeners, some say. And finally, we have some details of exactly what is involved in the proposal, although it appears that it is likely to be rejected. A city council committee balked at changing frequencies in exchange for cash, saying that shifting WRRFM 101.1 to a new spot could cut off some loyal listeners. Members said they would forego the $60 million that has been offered to ensure that all residents receive the city-owned station signal. The entire council was to discuss the proposal June 4th, but committee members said the rebuke of the proposed frequency swap probably was a preview of the meeting. Council member Valletta Forsyth Lill, chairman of the Arts, Education, and Libraries Committee, said the proposal is on life support. Last year, Mayor Laura Miller convened a task force to solicit proposals for a frequency swap with WRR. The panel, which received three bids, deemed a proposal for a three-way swap the most lucrative for the city. It calls for WRR to move to 105.7. KRNB-FM, currently on 105.7, an urban contemporary station, would move to 93.3, and classic rock The Bone, KDBN 93.3, would land at 101.1. In return, the city would receive $60 million in cash, free tower rental for 20 years, and other incentives, and WRR would be managed by public radio station KERA-FM 90.1. The 105.7 signal broadcast from a tower in Decatur is strongest in the northern reaches of Dallas. After poring over coverage maps, committee members said they feared they would be shortchanging the city's southern sector. Via Mike Cooper, a Los Angeles Times story of May 5th by Steve Carney, headlined KUSC to Widen Classical Audience. Hoping to bring Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart to a wider audience, KUSC-FM 91.5 in Los Angeles is joining forces with National Public Radio to distribute a 24-hour stream of classical music to stations nationwide. Classical Public Radio Network was created 5 years ago in partnership with Colorado Public Radio. It offers knowledgeable announcers and a varied playlist. Stations subscribing to the service can use as much or as little as they want, either to replace weak performing programs or to fill in gaps in their schedule. Brenda Barnes, president and GM of KUSC, says we want to take the intimidation factor out. You'll hear some modern music, some very early music, some challenging music in addition to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. KUSC listeners have already been hearing CPRN since 1998. Except for local programs such as Jim Sveda's Evening Show, Duff Murphy's Saturday Opera, and L.A. Philharmonic broadcasts, the programming heard on KUSC is the same as what's offered to CPRN subscribers. KUSC and Colorado Public Radio have been testing the service at a handful of stations. Now NPR will offer the service to its 732 member stations, 472 of which already carry classical music. I assume that's including translators. We're giving them more to work with, says Benjamin Rowe, NPR Director of Music. The service's economy of scale will enable even small outlets to have high-quality announcing and programming. Barnes said classical music stations often struggle to find announcers who not only know the music, but also can convey that information to lay listeners without jargon or pretense. Having the marketing muscle of NPR behind CPRN will help the service compete against similar classical streams offered by Minnesota Public Radio, called Classical 24, and Chicago's WFMT, the Beethoven Satellite Network. Here's a reaction to that story from Richard Cuff in Pennsylvania. Being a fan of classical music, I'm all for efforts to improve its accessibility. But I wonder how these folks will differentiate their offering from the Classical 24 and Beethoven Network offerings. Another classical station with a satellite feed that is occasionally picked up by others is WCPE, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Perhaps the argument is that stations who have invested in NPR membership and satellite access can thus add classical programming with minimal effort and presumably minimal cost. And this might be an effort by NPR to dissuade stations from picking up PRI membership, since Classical 24 is from Minnesota Public Radio, the organization largely behind PRI. All four of these are widely available as webcasts, easily linked via Kevin Kelly's publicradiofan.com website. Speaking of which, I cannot recommend highly enough publicradiofan.com, especially when used in conjunction with my lower-tech site, Monitoring Reminders Calendar at worldofradio.com. Among many other things, publicradiofan.com lists some radio reading services which are now available via webcast, not just on subcarriers, although I suppose they are there as well for local listeners. I know of about six of them. There may be more, and he's recently added four new ones. There's Sun Sounds in Phoenix, Arizona. There's another one in Louisiana. I'll include links to all of these in the summary. And the new ones are The RAISE audio server, R-A-I-S-E, which stands for Regional Audio Information Service of Asheville, North Carolina. Yes, I don't know where they got the E. It sponsors an audio library of current information. Either in Real Audio or Windows Media, the website is www.raisewnc, as in Western North Carolina, .org. Another one is the Metropolitan Washington Ear, free services for blind, visually impaired, and physically disabled people who cannot effectively read print. It's www.washear.org. Then there's the Talking Information Center in Marshfield, Massachusetts. That stands for Turning Print into Sound, www.ticnetwork.com. And finally, the Written Communications Radio Service in Akron, Ohio, or WCRS. It broadcasts newspapers, magazines, and books over closed-circuit radio for the visually impaired, but also on the Internet now. It's www.wcrsradio.org. I know there are many other public radio stations which have reading services for the visually impaired, but they insist that you get, even if there's no charge, one of those special FM subcarrier radios in order to hear it, rather than streaming it on the web, even if they're doing that with their main channel. If anyone else hears of additional reading services streaming on the web, please let us know. Here's a story from the Miami Herald of April 29th by Christina Hogue. A deal between a public radio station and a very commercial newspaper, the Miami Herald and WLRN. The two have formed a partnership in which the newspaper will produce news and info to air on the radio station. John Labonia, general manager of WLRN, says we have the pipeline and the Herald has the news-gathering machine, which we don't have. We're hoping this will become a model. Herald publisher Alberto Ibargen said this alliance unites the best news operation in South Florida with the best national news organization on radio, meaning NPR. We look forward to providing WLRN listeners with high-quality news they expect from the Herald, WLRN, and NPR. The Herald will hire a full-time staff of five radio journalists to produce five-minute news segments to air every half hour from 5:05 a.m. to 10:05 a.m. The staff will work out of a radio studio to be built in the Herald's downtown Miami newsroom. Reports will feature local reporting by and interviews with Herald staff writers and columnists, as well as business, sports, and weather. They'll also be fed to NPR's national network. And that's just the first phase, to be expanded later. Well, maybe this is not such a new thing, at least in South Florida. The story goes on. In print radio teams, the Sun Sentinel has partnerships with Palm Beach NPR station, WXEL 90.7, in which some dozen newspaper stories a day are turned into radio packages, and with WIOD 610 AM, which also uses that newspaper's content. The Fort Lauderdale Daily also has a TV partnership with WTVJ NBC6. Also from Florida, here's a somewhat more alarming development in the Tampa Tribune via Terry Kruger. WTTA nudges into local news with new format. The newsroom desks arrived last week. The set is almost ready. It just lacks monitors. The anchor chair is in place, but there's no anchor yet. Only one reporter was officially on staff. But soon WTTA's studio in Town and Country will be bustling with activity when the WB affiliate launches a 10 p.m. newscast this summer. It could sign on by mid-July. WTTA's 10 p.m. newscast will be different from others in many ways, from format to content to management. For example, there will be only one anchor. Nearly half of the hour-long newscast will originate from Sinclair's flagship station, WBFF-TV, near Baltimore. But it won't be identified as WBFF. The national reports, anchored weeknights by Morris Jones, will be labeled as News Central. Channel 38 will have its own News Central crew of five reporters to cover local stories. There'll also be local weather and sports. But we won't be chasing ambulances and covering break-ins, says Malia. The news director will be looking at issues and developing investigative pieces. Sinclair's centralizing of news is getting a lot of attention in the broadcast industry. The company plans to bring its News Central format to 30 of its 61 stations over the next 10 years. Smith, the CEO, David Smith, said he's doing this because he wants the Sinclair stations to take an active role in their respective communities by tackling issues. The move also saves money, Startup costs under the centralized format are estimated at one-half to one-third of what it would take for a local station to launch a newscast from scratch. It begins with a 10-minute segment of local news, followed by 10 minutes of national from Baltimore, then 5 minutes of local, 4 minutes of weather, and 10 minutes of local and national sports. So far, only Sinclair Station in Flint, Michigan, has adopted the new central format. On a related subject, here's an item by Scott Feibusch in the WTFDA Topica list. He says, a few months ago, WIVB Channel 4 in Buffalo and WNLO moved their master control from Buffalo to Indianapolis at a new central casting hub at sister LIN station WISH-TV. That hub is also shared by WDTN in Dayton, WLFI in Lafayette, and WANE in Fort Wayne. The Indiana stations are, of course, on Indiana Stupid Time, as my friend there calls it. In recent years, WISH has been delaying CBS primetime in summer months so as to maintain an 8 to 11 p.m. primetime schedule year-round. When WISH-DT signed on 5 years ago, they were among the first. It passed CBS primetime through live year-round. But that caused some consternation for the CBS lawyers in New York, who were worried that the separate plays of programming in Indianapolis might count against the number of runs of programming the network was allowed under its agreements with program producers. Never mind that at that point, there were perhaps 10 people in town who could watch DTV. So it came to be that WISH was compelled to spend big bucks on one of the first DTV profile servers to ingest the CBS DTV feed and spit it out again an hour later. And as long as that box is sitting there, I wonder if it's being put to other uses too, like providing a delayed feed for WIVB DT in Buffalo. More tales of Indiana Stupid Time. WANE wanted to keep a constant late afternoon schedule year-round, so it carries CBS daytime programming live in the summer months, but delays it 23 hours in the winter. In so doing, of course, the station has to edit out all the CBS Primetime Tonight and other promos which are dated in the network programming. It turns out to be something approaching a full-time job, albeit made easier by the new digital gear in Indianapolis. Wayne and the other big three Fort Wayne stations just began delaying primetime in the summer 2 years ago. Good for Fort Wayners, but not so good for the folks in Ohio and Michigan who watch Fort Wayne TV and now have primetime from 9 p.m. to midnight half the year. It's sort of the opposite problem that the KELO network faces in South Dakota, where viewers in most of the state get primetime from 7 to 10 Central, but folks watching satellite KCLO 15 in Rapid City end up with CBS primetime from 6 to 9 Mountain Time. Letterman starts at 9:35 and Craig Kilborn at 10:35. Given how cheap profile servers have become, I wonder if they'll ever put one out there to delay KCLO 1 hour. And speaking of digital and high-definition TV, Craig Christ says, I discovered an interesting website for checking HDTV transmissions and antennas. It's www.antennaweb.org. You can plug in your zip code and get a list of DTV stations supposedly on the air in your area, showing the distance and antenna heading and how big an antenna you may need. More antenna news, but this time about transmitting AM. In the domestic DX Digest of the National Radio Club, Patrick Griffith says rumor is that KEZZ 1470 in Estes Park, Colorado, may get one of the country's first ultra-short Kinstar AM antennas. If the FCC approves, KEZZ may install the 40-foot Kinstar this summer to help resolve a long, ongoing battle between the station and local politicians over the relocation of their antenna. So, if you're visiting Rocky Mountain National Park this summer, I'd like to do that. I suggest you check it out. On the NRC AM list, Kevin Redding in Mesa, Arizona reports hearing a new station in his area, KFHX on 1620. He says they just came on the air May 16th. I'd never heard of them before. So I checked their website, www.kfhx.org, which says, welcome to the home of KFHX Radio, AM 1620, music, talk, sports radio for Fountain Hills, Arizona, and the world. KFHX is the first radio station in Fountain Hills, offering a wide variety of programming and personalities. And you can listen on the web via Windows Media Player. The website mentions the St. Dominic's Food Bank, which apparently has something to do with the station, at least providing a location for it in Fountain Hills. Trouble is, no one has been able to find anything about this in FCC records. Is it a pirate, or is it a low-power Part 15 operation? You know, if stations have low enough power, they don't need to be licensed. But he's hearing it some distance away. It would appear to be more than the minimum amount of power allowed in Part 15. He's hearing them about 17 miles away. It appears to be no secret in the Phoenix area, since Sheriff Joe has a show and the Catholic Church is also involved. Harry Helms in Las Vegas remarks, "No doubt it's supposed to be a Part 15 station, but like my local Fat Rock on 1650, there's no way it's running 100 milliwatts, and the 5-foot antenna, including ground, limit if you can hear it 5 miles away. Bet you anything it's running one of those Ramsey 5 or 10-watt AM transmitters. Maybe they aren't even aware they're operating illegally." You may no longer be able to find the shortwave radio you want or a component at Radio Shack, but you can find a subway car, at least on eBay. Harry Helms says, "When I worked for Radio Shack National Headquarters in 1979-81, the subway would run from the parking area below Tandy Center to the first floor between the two towers of the center. It was built as the only privately operated and free subway in the world, although it only traveled about 200 feet underground. I rode it every day from the parking lot to my job in Radio Shack's Technical Publications Group, where my masterpieces included the DX-302 manual. Radio Shack recently sold Tandy Center and is relocating to a smaller office facility, another sign of the slow demise of this former retailing powerhouse." And he's found on eBay a subway car now for sale. Of course, the URL is far too long, but in case it's still there, we'll include a link to it in the summary for this Continent of Media, number 0303. Or just search at eBay for this 10-digit item number, 241-450-3391. Nick Leggett and Rec Networks inform us that the FCC has a notice of inquiry out, meaning public comments may be filed on proposed rulemaking about broadband over power lines, which we fear will greatly interfere with ham radio and with shortwave listening if approved. We'll include a link to the PDF file about this, but note the dates. Written comments are due on or before August 6th, and reply comments are due by September 5th. Finally, this via Rick Robinson on the NRC AM list. He says he got it from one of his old DJ friends. "You know you're an aging radio DJ when you were first hired by a GM who actually worked in radio before becoming GM. You excitedly turned the radio up at the sound of dead air on the competitor station. Sales guys wore Old Spice to cover the smell of liquor. You were playing Elvis number one hits when he was alive. You worked for only one station, and you could name the guy who owned it. You remember when normal people listened to AM radio and only hippies listened to FM. Radio stations used to have enough on-air talent to field a softball team every summer. You're at least 10 years older than the last two GMs who fired you. You know the difference between good reel-to-reel tape and cheap reel-to-reel tape. You always had a screwdriver in the studio so you could take a fouled-up card apart at a moment's notice. You can cue a record, run down the hall, go to the bathroom, and be back in 2 minutes and 50 seconds for the segue. You still have dreams of a song running out and not being able to find the control room door." Well, there are a lot more of these in DX Listening Digest 3083 at worldofradio.com. Glenn Hauser here. Hope you've enjoyed this edition of Continent of Media 0303.